It's summer rerun time on the networks, but there's been plenty of new action on C-SPAN, with its coverage of confirmation hearings and congressional debate on the budget, gays in the military, and military-based closings. C-SPAN has enabled us to watch our government at its best and its worst. It provides gavel-to-gavel coverage of House and Senate proceedings, hearings, debates, symposia on public policy, roundtable discussions, and call-in shows. C-SPAN is nonprofit, funded as a public service by America's cable companies. Brian Lamb is the founder and CEO of C-SPAN. But C-SPAN viewers know him as a host who does interviews and takes listener calls. I spoke to him last January. His mission is to bring events to us in their entirety. No editing, no commentary. He even wants the cameras to watch with a neutral eye.
We try very hard not to try to influence the audience with the way the camera angles are positioned or with the tightness of the shot. The best way to describe that, anybody that's ever watched 60 Minutes knows that they use special camera angles to help create a drama in the whole program. That's something that we would never do, at least we would knowingly never do it, because we want you to see the person or the individual exactly the way you would if you're sitting in a room with them. You wouldn't get up tight on their eyes or on their mouth. You would have a, you know, just a natural conversation. So if you go back to the conventions, you will, and you examined our coverage, there was a lot of effort made at not trying to artificially portray what was going on in the hall.
Let's talk a little bit about the creation of C-SPAN. You started proposing the idea of a cable network that would cover Congress back in 1977. Tell us how you got the initial idea for this.
Well, it was kind of an evolving thing. I came to Washington for the first time back in 1966 when I was in the United States Navy, and I was assigned to the Pentagon as a public affairs officer that literally every day dealt with requests from the commercial networks to cover different events. I mean, an example, at the time the Secretary of Defense was Robert McNamara, and if one of the networks wanted to interview him, they might call our department and I might get the call and I might have to, what they called it those days, staffing it. So I got very interesting exposure to how the whole system worked. And in 1966, I was 25 years old, and it was kind of my real, I mean, it's my first real education on how the system worked. The longer I was around it, the more I saw that a lot of what ended up on the evening news was not what happened that day.
Can you give me an example of something that you watched on the evening news and said, that's not what happened?
I'll give you a great example. There was a correspondent by the name of Bill Downs, who's no longer alive. He used to work at CBS. He was in the Eric Severide group years ago. And then he eventually was hired by ABC, and he was assigned to the Pentagon. When I was there in 1966, Bill Downs was the Pentagon correspondent for ABC. That was right in the middle of the Vietnam War and the buildup in 66 and 67. And I remember a group of young people coming down from Volantown, Connecticut, about 40 of them, marching against the war, coming to the Pentagon. They were going to disrupt the war machine, and they marched on the Pentagon, and they were allowed to come in, and they camped out in front of the war room where the Joint Chiefs of Staff met. And Bill Downs one afternoon, and I was assigned to be the, you know, the communications officer to go with him down to do his piece. And so he stood up in the middle of these young people. Up until that point, they had been lying on the floor, very peaceful, very pleasant human beings, had a strong message to deliver, and it was a pacifist message that the war was wrong. There's nothing wrong with any of that. That's part of our system. But the minute that the cameras rolled for ABC and that Bill Downs stood up, all of these young people stood up, took their placards, and started screaming, stop the war, stop the war. And so Bill Downs is shouting to the camera, you know, this is Bill Downs in the middle of all these young people outside the war room at the Pentagon for ABC News. There was nothing that the audience saw in that report that was an accurate account of how those young people had been operating. And that was one of many things that I saw when I was in the Pentagon that told me that there was just something a little bit askew here and that the audience ought to see the whole thing and make up their own mind as to what is right and what is wrong.
So when you first started televising Congress, and this was back in 1979, what were some of the debates in-house and the debates with Congress about how to televise it? Where should the cameras be? Who should control the cameras?
Well, one of the most disappointing aspects of our association with the Congress, I think, over the years has been that they have had such tight control over the cameras. It's probably as tight a control as any country in the world. It doesn't track with what our democracy is all about, and I've never quite understood why they were so concerned about the coverage. But the Speaker of the House has total control over who will be televised and you know, basically photographed at any one point. And there have been some controversies over that. As a matter of fact, Tip O'Neill years ago turned the cameras on the whole chamber to show during special orders that there wasn't anybody there. If I had anything to say about it, and I do not, and I've never tried to have anything to say about it, I would, we would put our own cameras in there and we would show the chambers reflecting exactly what's there during the time of day when they're actually having legislative debate. So we really stay away from the operation of the House and its television facility. That's their business. We try to tell the audience often enough so that they know that they're controlling the cameras, so they don't think that we're doing it. That will probably not change for a long time.
Why not? Don't you have enough clout now to say, listen, you guys, you really want to be on C-SPAN now. You've seen the effects it has. So now we're going to insist that we control the cameras.
We don't have enough clout, don't have any clout with them when it comes to that. And as a matter of fact, the only people that have clout, and this is probably the way it ought to be, is the people. And if the public at large gets mad enough about anything that they see in the Congress, they can have a major impact. And probably the most recent example of that was the Zoe Baird nomination.
What would you do differently if you were controlling how Congress was televised?
Well, if we were allowed to put our own cameras in there, we would just show the facility as it is. We would show reaction shots. The only people that are allowed to be shown on camera are those speaking. In the British House of Commons, they think they have the toughest laws in the world about what can be seen. But one of the laws, one of the regulations in the British House of Commons is that they can show reaction shots. If somebody is addressing another member of the parliament, the camera can pick that other member up to see what kind of face they're making. You can't even do that in the House of Representatives. And what I think they ought to do, both in the House and the Senate, and again, they don't ask me, and they're not about to ask me, but if they ever did, is that they ought to show it as it is.
My guest is Brian Lamb, the founder of C-SPAN. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Brian Lamb, the founder of C-SPAN, is my guest. Now, did it take a longer time to convince the Senate? You didn't start broadcasting the Senate till 1986. Was that because of money or because they weren't interested?
Well, we didn't convince the Senate. The Senate convinced itself. And the way that worked was in 1981, when Howard Baker was majority leader, he put a piece of legislation into the hopper. It was, I believe it was Senate Resolution 20, if I can remember right, that would have opened the Senate to television. And for a lot of reasons, he was not successful during his tenure as majority leader in getting the Senate to go on television. Some people suspected that he was running for president and that that was his way of getting attention, through the cameras. But really what happened in the end was Senator Russell Long was one of the great opponents of televising the Senate, and so was Senator Robert Byrd. And back in about 1985 or so, Senator Byrd started to, and this is what he told me, he started to hear when he would go back home to West Virginia that people were confusing him with Speaker Tip O'Neill because they both had white hair. And they saw Tip O'Neill on television a lot. And I think what really did it for Senator Byrd was the day he got introduced as this, the Speaker of the House, Bob Byrd, at some function. At least that's what he told me. And he decided that if the Senate was going to be the institution that he thought it was, and that it was the world's most deliberative body and the world's most important debating organization, that the Senate better go on television. He convinced Senator Russell Long to step aside. He led the charge in the Senate, and when he did that and dropped his opposition, it was passed.
Brian Lim, you're the founder of C-SPAN and the CEO. How did you decide to put yourself on the air? You're one of the people who we often see on the air doing interviews or taking phone calls, doing continuity between broadcasts.
I was cheap. I was real cheap. Still am cheap. In the early days, there were only, when I went on the air first, I think there were seven people that worked at C-SPAN. I mean, we'd take a couple cameras up to the hill and cover a hearing in the daytime, run them back to the studio. Actually, it was one big office where I sat in and one of my helpers, Janet Dabrowski, sat in. We all sat in one room. We cleared the desks off at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We fired up the cameras. We opened them up and took calls, telephone calls, in 1980. October 7th was our first day, from the audience on our business lines. So sometimes we get a call from somebody that wanted to do business with us during the middle of the call-in show, and they found themselves on the air talking to us about issues. So in those very early days, and frankly, the only people that were paying attention, because no one in Washington could see us in those early days, were just common, ordinary, down-to-earth folks out there that knew everything that was going on, loved the fact that they were there in the early days, and didn't have any pretense or worry about whether or not we were sophisticated.
So, okay, so you put yourself on the air because you were cheap, you said. But I think your policy is basically not to hire on-air people, but to use people from behind the scenes.
We have about seven people now that go on the air.
Mm-hmm.
All but two of them work full-time at C-SPAN. Two of them do part-time work for us, fill in when we have problems. Everybody else has a major job. Susan Swain, who's on the air, is our senior vice president and co-chief operating officer. Bruce Collins is our general counsel. Lou Ketchum and Steve Scully are producers. And I'm sure I'm leaving somebody out. Jim Gately and Ed Maddox are outsiders who come in and do these shows for us on an ad hoc basis. The philosophy is that we are not a personality-driven network, that somebody has to sit there and punch the buttons. As a matter of fact, we've toyed with the idea of putting two guests out there and letting them punch their own buttons and see what happens. It'd be a little bit difficult if you hadn't done it before, only because it's kind of intimidating with all the technology. But the objective is just to stay out of the way, that let people talk to the guests, let them hear what the guests have to say. It's not unlike what you do, except that on television, as you know, almost everything that is done has to be personality-driven in order to keep those ratings high. Again, we have no requirement to have high ratings. And so we also want to make sure that our hosts, under no circumstances at any time, although this is very difficult to do, do not portray any kind of bias and just stay out of the way so that the public can make up their own mind about the guests and the callers can talk directly and form their own opinions. And, you know, by the way, sometimes we come off as extraordinarily dull. Understandably so, we know that, but again, that's part of our thing.
That's right. No, it's true. Listen, people, when people use the word dull in relation to C-SPAN, it's with some amount of praise, you know?
Well, and you do get tired of, you know, they dare to be dull, but it's an occupational hazard sometimes. Again, though, everybody needs to constantly look at who's paying the bills. And in our case, our industry is paying the bills through the good graces of our cable industry subscribers. They're not requiring us to deliver them eyeballs for advertisers. And that gives us an enormous amount of freedom. And because of that, we can be what we are. And we're not Pollyannas about this.
So I know one of the places you got your start on TV was doing a show called Dance Date. And this was, I think, when you were in college.
It was, and as a matter of fact, just to complete probably a childhood dream of mine, I met Dick Clark 2 weeks ago. The disgusting thing is he looks about 10 years younger than I do, and when I was growing up, I'm 51, when I was growing up, Dick Clark at WFIL in Philadelphia was the most important person in my life. I copied everything he did. I started my own little dance show in Lafayette, Indiana on Channel 18. I built the set, sold the time, hosted the program, and it was really one of the great learning experiences there's not a whole lot of difference between what I do today and what I did then. It's just a different topic of discussion.
Yeah, but it's very subjective to rate records, isn't it?
Yeah. What do you give this? A 95. I like the beat, you know?
Did you do that? Did you do those rate the record
we
things
did,
like Dick Clark?
As I said, Terry, I copied everything that Dick Clark, I think I even tried to sound like him, which is impossible. Everything that he did, I tried to do.
So you played rock and roll?
Everything, yeah. Rock and roll. Remember, we had one camera to do this show. It was a black and white. Gary Henderson, one of the engineers here at NPR, is looking because he knows what I'm talking about, a Vidicon camera, which meant that it wasn't very good. And the way that we had, you know, the way that we were able to do this show was that we photographed on film a record running, you know, on a turntable, and we made a continuous loop so that the director could push the button, and on the screen would come this record. You couldn't see what record it was running, you know, running around on your screen so that they could move the camera back to show some of the kids dancing in a different position in the studio. So it was as basic an operation as you could ever imagine. And that's kind of the way C-SPAN was, I can tell you, in 1979.
Brian Lamb is the founder and CEO of C-SPAN. Our interview was recorded last January. This is Fresh Air.